The gospel reading is from the book of John, chapter 21, verses 1 through 19. After these things, Jesus showed himself again to the disciples by the Sea of Tiberias, and he showed himself in this way. Gathered there together were Simon Peter, Thomas called the Twin, Nathanael of Cana in Galilee, the sons of Zebedee, and two others of his disciples. Simon Peter said to them, "I am going fishing." They said to him, "We will go with you." They went out and got into the boat, but that night they caught nothing. Just after daybreak, Jesus stood on the beach, but the disciples did not know that it was Jesus. Jesus said to them, "Children, you have no fish, have you?" They answered him, "No." He said to them, "Cast the net to the right side of the boat, and you will find some." So they cast it, and now they were not able to haul it in because there were so many fish. The disciple whom Jesus loved said to Peter, "It is the Lord." When Simon Peter heard that it was the Lord, he put on some clothes, for he was naked, and jumped into the sea. But the other disciples came in the boat dragging the net full of fish, for they were not far from the land, only about 100 yards off. When they had gone ashore, they saw a charcoal fire there with fish on it and bread. Jesus said to them, "Bring some of the fish that you have just caught." So Simon Peter went aboard and hauled the net ashore, full of large fish, 153 of them. And though there were so many, the net was not torn. Jesus said to them, "Come and have breakfast." Now none of the disciples dared to ask him, "Who are you?" because they knew it was the Lord. Jesus came and took the bread and gave it to them, and did the same with the fish. This was now the third time that Jesus appeared to the disciples after he was raised from the dead. When they had finished breakfast, Jesus said to Simon Peter, "Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these?" He said to him, "Yes, Lord, you know that I love you." Jesus said to him, "Feed my lambs." A second time he said to him, "Simon, son of John, do you love me?" He said to him, "Yes, Lord, you know that I love you." Jesus said to him, "Tend my sheep." He said to him the third time, "Simon, son of John, do you love me?" Peter felt hurt because he said to him the third time, "Do you love me?" And he said to him, "Lord, you know everything. You know that I love you." Jesus said to him, "Feed my sheep. Very truly, I tell you, when you were younger, you used to fasten your own belt and go wherever you wished. But when you grow old, you will stretch out your hands and someone else will fasten a belt around you and take you where you do not wish to go." He said this to indicate the kind of death by which he would glorify God. After this, he said to him, "Follow me." The word of the Lord.
I really enjoy the musical called Into the Woods. It was made into a movie a couple years ago, and one of the fun things about this musical is all the main characters are taken from fairy tales. Rapunzel, Little Red Riding Hood, and then the Big Bad Wolf, and Wicked Witch, and all these characters in there. And the first half of the movie just takes all these and kind of mishmashes them up, and they all have to go on their quest to accomplish what they accomplish according to the regular fairy tale. And in order to do that, they have to go on a journey in and through the woods. Like Cinderella has to, with the help of her fairy godmother, go through the woods to find her way to the palace where she can attend the ball and leave her slipper there, and the prince can find it, and then he has to go on the journey through the woods back to find Cinderella where she's living and fit the slipper on her, and they live happily ever after. Jack and the Beanstalk, you know, his mother and he are so poor, he has to go sell a cow and he has to go into the woods, but there he gets tricked and he gets the handful of beans for the cow, but then they turn out to be magic beans, and the stalk grows up into the clouds where he goes to the land of the giants and steals their gold. And at the end of the first act, he and his mother are living as millionaires. And everyone accomplishes their journey, and at the end of the first act, everyone seems to be happy, and they all sing a song together called Ever After, as in, we're all going to live happily ever after. So during the intermission of that musical, you sit there and wonder, All right, all the ends got tied up. What is the second act of this musical going to be about? Well, as with all life, life never stands still. We get to a place where we think, life is good, now it's just going to be smooth sailing. But then life happens, doesn't it? And it takes us always on a farther journey. So in the second act, everyone is, all the characters, as their life upended. Poor Cinderella, this handsome prince, he has a wandering eye and a wandering heart, and she has to go into the woods to find him and call him back. Of course, the giant is unhappy that his gold was stolen, so he's climbed down and he's stomping around in the woods, causing all sorts of trouble. So Jack realizes, I caused this, so I'm going to go out and kill that giant and rescue everyone. So he goes back into the woods, and everyone goes back onto the further journey that they did not expect. That's exactly, I think, what Peter and the disciples had to learn today. Just because the resurrection had happened, they weren't going to live just happily ever after. There were new challenges. There was a new journey to take. And Jesus lovingly came back to his disciples and showed them that journey that they needed to take. You know, Peter and the disciples had been through a lot with Jesus. They'd spent about 3 years with him learning his teachings. They saw the increased opposition to Jesus. They saw the authorities turn against him, condemn him, kill him. After waiting 3 terrible days, they found new life. But that wasn't enough, even though they would have liked to stop right there and gone on. We come to this story today, and Peter is, he's bored, kind of. Doesn't know what to do. And so he says, you know, Jesus isn't around as much as he was before. I don't know what we're supposed to do. I don't know what Jesus is up to right now, but I do know fishing, so I'm going fishing, doing something that I know, that I think I'm in control of. And all the disciples go, oh, we got nothing better to do. Let's go. And so the story says they fished all night. Who fishes all night? Maybe this is a symbol. If you're fishing in the dark only because you thought it was a good idea to keep you from being bored, maybe that isn't going to be very fruitful, and they don't get a single fish, do they? Well, a little bit more symbolism. As soon as the dawn comes, as soon as there's light, who shows up? Who comes with the light? Jesus, right? And it's interesting, the disciples don't recognize him, but he recognizes them. And he calls to them with affection because he knows what's happened there, how going off on their own, thinking it was a good idea, they hadn't accomplished anything. So he calls them a term of endearment, says children, but it also means you're not quite an adult yet. But he doesn't ask them, did you get any fish, because he knows they didn't. He knows they were on a fool's errand. Instead, he just says, you didn't get any fish, did you? And they go, no. So he says, well, why don't you try fishing out one more time? Trust me, try it one more time. And guess what? Instead of going off on their own little headstrong, I'm just going to go fishing because I got nothing better to do in the middle of the night, which yields nothing, now when they listen to Jesus, when they trust him, when they obey him and act on that, guess what happens? The net is overflowing with fish. Interesting how that works, huh? Pretty clear. That would be a great point to end the sermon. Nice and tidy, all nice and neat in the package. But the story goes on, so we'll go on some more too. Jesus calls his disciples in with all these fish, and there he is on the shore, and he's got a little charcoal fire, it says, and he's cooking him breakfast. And after breakfast, he and Peter have this give and take, these 3 questions and 3 answers. And it sounds very formal, almost like a ritual. What's going on? Who talks that way? Why is Jesus doing this with Peter, this back and forth? Well, think back. When was the last time Peter was warming his hands at a fire and he was asked the same question 3 times? It was the night in which Jesus was betrayed, right? And they had arrested him, and they'd taken him into the city of Jerusalem, and they were trying him in a kangaroo court on trumped-up charges. And Peter followed, and trying to see what was going on, but he was afraid, because if they'd arrested his master, they might just arrest him next. But he was standing, warming his hands outside where the court was, and people came up to him and recognized him and asked him three different times, "Don't you know Jesus? Weren't you with him? Weren't you one of his gang?" And three times Peter says, "Nope, I don't know the guy. I have nothing to do with him." How do you think Peter felt after that? Anytime I betray or hurt somebody that I love, I feel terrible. I feel guilty. I feel shame. Well, here comes Jesus and literally allows Peter three opportunities to unsay his denial. Three times now to say, "Jesus, I love you." A wonderful, wonderful gift. But I think there's a little something more going on there in there too. In Greek, they have several terms for the word love. When Jesus first asked Peter a question, it seems like a setup for Peter. This is one of those questions that Peter just seems in the past to knock out of the park. Jesus asks, "Peter, do you love me?" And the word he uses for love means unconditionally, absolutely, totally self-giving love. Is that the kind of love that you have? The kind of love that God has for all of us in our creation. And so Jesus says, "Peter, do you love me more than all the rest of these?" And in the past, Peter, with all his confidence, would have said, "Yes, Lord, you know I love you more than anyone in the whole world." But now he doesn't go there. Now he has some humility. Now he recognizes his own limitations. And so when Jesus said, "Do you love me this ultimate way?" Peter goes, "I love you like a friend. We're friends." Interesting. Jesus again says, "Do you love me in this all-encompassing way?" And Peter goes, "Lord, you know we're friends." And the third time, it's very interesting. Jesus takes the word down a notch, and Jesus says, "All right, Peter, are we really friends?" And Peter goes, "You know we are, Lord." And Jesus goes, "Bingo, I can work with that. If we are really friends in partnership like that, then I can use you to feed my sheep." How often do we want or think or feel that we have to be perfect and have this perfect love and our lives absolutely together before God can use us? And so nothing ever gets done. Whereas Jesus is simply saying, "If we're friends, I can use you." Now that's a great point, and that's easy to understand, and that would be a great place to end the sermon too. But the story goes on. Jesus follows that up with this strange and very negative-sounding statement, doesn't he? He says, "Peter, you know, when you were a young man, you could put on your own belt and your own clothes that you chose, and you can go wherever you want and accomplish whatever you want. But as you grow older, you're going to find out that you need someone else to dress you and someone else to take you places." Really negative. And the Bible has a little parenthesis in there saying, well, this was referring to the death that Peter was going to die, because he was going to be dragged off and crucified and die a martyr's death. But I think there's something more going on here. Jesus is saying, "Peter, when you were young, you thought you had the world by the tail. You thought everything was about you and you could accomplish it all alone. But remember when you went fishing all on your own, thinking it was your idea and it bore no fruit? Maybe life is about learning to trust me, trust our partnership, and then things can actually happen." I have a good friend, he's 90 years old, he fell a couple weeks ago and was in the hospital, and so I went over to visit him in Fargo, and he was not taking his hospitalization well, because, you know, when you slip and fall like that, they want to make sure that you're steady and you're strong and you're healed again, so they would not let him out of the bed or out of the chair. He couldn't walk without calling the nurse, which drove him crazy. And when he wanted to go somewhere, he'd have to call the nurse. And what would the nurse do? They'd come in and they'd put a belt on him, this big canvas belt around him, so that when he got up, they could hold that belt and keep him steady. If he was going to fall, they could immediately grab that belt and hold him up. He hated it. We would all hate it. We all want our independence. But at that time, if he had tried to get out of bed by his own, he would have been too weak. He could have fallen. He would have been in much worse shape. But if that nurse came and helped him with that hand on the belt, he could actually accomplish what he wanted to do. Boy, it hurts our ego to say, I'm not always in charge, and I can't always make it on myself. But when we look at God and say, all right, I trust you. When we shut up and listen to God actually speaking to us, rather than just letting our ego say, do this, do that, instead we just quiet ourselves and listen to where God actually wants to lead us, maybe our life would be much more fruitful. Jesus gives us the chance to say, do you love me? Are you going to be my friend? Can we be partners together? Trust me. Then we can actually accomplish things in this world. Then the sheep of this world can be fed. You know, that's an excellent point, and that's an excellent place to stop this sermon. Amen.